This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode about climate science. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Some parts of Antarctica are warming at a very fast pace, like the Antarctic Peninsula, a piece of land that juts up from the continent towards South America. Other parts of Antarctica are not warming so quickly. And there are other things at play here that make all of this difficult to study, like wind and weather patterns that can shift naturally. The changing conditions have ripple effects that impact wildlife in the area. For example, penguins. Adélie penguin populations have declined drastically, while Gen 2 penguins have become more plentiful. Scientists are trying to figure out how the numbers are shifting and why. Sophia Schmidt reports.
Winter is just beginning on the western Antarctic Peninsula. That means temperatures are dropping and the day length is starting to shrink. Adolescent penguins have recently left their nests. Young Adélie penguins swim out to sea, resting on patches of floating sea ice. Gen 2 penguins, with their bright orange beaks and flippers, hang out on rocky islands and dive into the chilly water, hunting for shrimp-like krill and small fish. Both Adélie and Gen 2 penguins eat the same kind of prey, and scientists are trying to figure out how that prey responds to changes in the environment. Matthew Brees is a researcher at the University of Delaware.
We arrived on station.
This past summer in Antarctica, Matt collected data on how much krill was available for the penguins to eat and where it was located. He studied the phytoplankton and algae the krill eat, too.
So it's kind of a food web all the way from the very bottom, you know, light and nutrients all the way up to penguins.
Matt's team uses a torpedo-shaped robot to gather data underwater. It's equipped with sensors to measure all kinds of ocean conditions.
The salinity, turbidity, how much sediment or things like that are in the water, temperature all the way at depth.
How do all of these variables impact the availability of food for the penguins? Each day, if the weather's good, the team packs the robot, also known as an autonomous underwater vehicle, or AUV, into an inflatable boat.
We're in the Zodiac, headed out to the AUV launch point. We're about 9 kilometers away from the station.
The boat's pretty small, about the size of a moving truck.
Palmer Station, this is Zodiac 4. We're leaving the local boating area, and we're going to head to the AUV drop-off point near the Gen 2 transect.
Copy that, Zodiac 4.
A little bit of brash ice in the area that we have to watch out for, so I can't go full speed. But it's a nice day.
The team programs the robot with a mission: swim in a crisscross pattern over the top of a deep water canyon. And then they lower the robot, all 150 pounds of it, over the side of the boat.
Layla's sending the run command now.
The robot runs its mission, gathering data for a few hours. Then the researchers find the robot using acoustic signals and go pick it up.
You know, load it on the boat, motor back to the station, and then put the vehicle back on charge, download the data, and look at the data, make sure we're collecting good quality data, and then do it all again the next day.
Palmer Station, Zodiac 4. We have launched the AUV, and we are returning to the station.
The data Matt is gathering on where the penguin food is helps other researchers, like Megan Cimino from UC Santa Cruz. She's in Antarctica right now, trying to figure out why some penguin populations are declining sharply, while others are thriving.
It's sort of an interesting problem because they're all mainly eating the same food, krill, and they're breeding relatively close together. They're breeding on different islands, but about 10 kilometers apart. So they're all sort of in the same area, foraging within the same regions on the same thing. So how can their populations be doing such different things?
The two species, Adélie and Gen 2, are closely related. They're both black and white, like cartoon penguins. The Adélies are about 2 feet tall and weigh roughly as much as a house cat. They've got distinctive little white rings around their eyes and are found on coasts around the entire Antarctic continent, wherever they can find bare rocky ground to lay their eggs. The Gen 2 penguins are a little bigger and can swim faster. They have a white patch above their eye. They're found further from the pole on the milder Antarctic Peninsula and sub-Antarctic islands. Megan works on a long-term research study where scientists have collected the same sorts of data since the 1990s. She spends a few months of the year at a research base near the peninsula called Palmer Station. It's a cluster of buildings covered in blue-gray siding on a craggy, rocky area with a big white glacier in the backdrop. There are a few dozen people, a library, a gift shop, a gym, a makeshift t-shirt printing studio, and a movie theater.
Being here, you think you would feel very isolated, but it's actually the opposite. You're living and working, eating dinner, like hiking alongside sort of the same people every day. And you have this, you know, small community, small family that you're celebrating all these holidays with, or people's birthdays. And it can be like very fun and very busy and also like very nerdy. You know, a lot of us are a bunch of scientists working on similar problems. And so it can be a really productive sort of atmosphere to work on your project.
On days when the weather's good enough, Megan travels by boat to nearby islands.
All right, we've just gotten off the boat and we're walking up to the penguin colony now.
She counts penguins in nesting areas using a tally counter. She measures and weighs chicks before they leave the nest.
Okay, beak length is 46.5.
And she tapes tiny GPS transmitters to adult penguins' backs to track them as they hunt for food. One potential explanation Megan has for why Adelie and Gen 2 penguins are responding differently to the changing environment has to do with rain and snow. She says there's some evidence that the Antarctic Peninsula has gotten more precipitation. Both Adelie and Gen 2 penguins breed in large colonies made up of hundreds or thousands of pairs. They lay their eggs on bare rock, where they build nests out of small pebbles so their eggs don't roll away.
They need those pebbles to be exposed to make a nice nest. And if they get to their breeding site and it's covered in snow, they either can just, you know, lay their egg anyway in the snow or sort of wait as long as they can for that snow to melt to build their nest and then lay their eggs.
Gen 2 penguins stay on the same island all year round, so they have some flexibility in when they lay their eggs. Megan says they can wait until the snow melts. But the Adelies are on a strict schedule because they migrate out to sea each winter.
So they can't be, you know, waiting around forever for the snow to melt. So a lot of times they could be laying their eggs on snow.
Megan says wet eggs are less likely to hatch. And even if they do,
these chicks don't have waterproof feathers. So when their feathers do get wet, the chick can get, you know, very cold. And then they're having to expend energy to keep their body warm.
Megan's work is about observation, collecting data, putting together a bigger picture. But seeing this all play out often takes an emotional toll.
To see colonies decrease in size and chicks not survive and, you know, seeing chicks wet and cold, it's really depressing for sure.
Seeing the Adelie numbers decrease could have to do with the snow on land. It could be related to humans fishing for krill in the waters nearby. And Megan has another theory. The amount of sea ice off the western Antarctic Peninsula has been decreasing, which may make life tougher for the Adelie penguins. They rely on sea ice, especially during the winter when they head out to sea. The ice is a nice place to rest and escape predators. It's also key to the food web.
Sea ice can attract a lot of other critters that they eat, so it could provide a nice like foraging habitat and then resting platform.
With less sea ice, Adelies could miss that crucial part of their habitat. Gen 2 penguins, on the other hand, tend to live in places with less sea ice.
Gen 2s are more ice avoiding.
Megan says it's important to study penguins because they're a good indicator of overall change.
By studying seabirds, you can get a look into basically all ecosystem components. You know, through the eyes of a penguin, you can study oceanography, weather, sea ice, and prey resources.
Megan and other scientists predict that in decades to come, Adelies could disappear from the western Antarctic Peninsula and nearby islands.
We've already seen one of the islands around here have an Adelie colony that went extinct, and a few of our other colonies on different islands are very close to extinction. We'll see how long they sort of hold out.
But in other parts of Antarctica, researchers have seen adelies thrive. For example, on Ross Island, which is thousands of miles away from Palmer Station in Antarctica. It's closer to the pole. It's colder than the peninsula, where Megan works. Too cold for the Gen 2 penguins. Grant Ballard does research here. He's chief science officer at Point Blue, a nonprofit research organization that advocates for conservation. Grant and his team are there during Antarctic summer, when there's 24 hours of sunlight. But that doesn't translate to warmth. Temperatures range from just 0 degrees Fahrenheit to around 32 degrees at best. Somehow, they sleep in canvas tents.
Basically, it's horrible. You just get in your sleeping bag. Sleeping bags are awesome. You know, and then you basically are doing crunches or some kind of shivering or something to warm up inside your sleeping bag for the first, you know, whatever, 5 or 10 minutes, and then you're fine.
They eat two breakfasts and snack all day to fend off the cold. They hike miles to and from Adelie breeding areas, where they count some penguins by hand.
We'll have like two or three people count the same one at the same time, and then try to get our number to be within 5% of each other, and that can be frustrating.
Some subcolonies there have grown to over 1,000 breeding pairs, so Grant's team uses drones to count those. Grant describes himself as a die-hard optimist, and he thinks warming temperatures in Antarctica could create not just problems, but also new options for penguins. For example, scientists have found ancient penguin mummies on a coastline near where Grant does his research. The scientists think cooling temperatures hundreds of years ago may have made the place uninhabitable for adelies, but that might not be the case anymore.
There's going to be new opportunities, so there's going to be places where the ecosystem will thrive and sort of like new life will be emerging.
In general, Adelie penguins return to the place they were born to lay their first eggs, then keep breeding in that same place every year. This makes it hard for a colony to move as the environment changes. But in the nearly 30 years Grant has been traveling to Antarctica, he's observed individual differences in penguins. He's met some characters, like a penguin he called White Cheek.
I followed that bird for basically her whole life. She had a white spot on her cheek, on her left cheek. Compared to other penguins, she was very consistent at raising two chicks every year and was very efficient at bringing back food. So she made quick. She was able to find food more quickly than the average penguin.
Grant says some penguins have personalities. Some leave their chicks alone earlier, others later. Some are fastidious about their pebble nests.
There's individuals that are more prickly towards other penguins and others that are sort of nonchalant. Others that are very expert at stealing rocks from one another and others that don't care about rocks.
And this individuality could actually be useful in adapting to climate change. An adventurous youngster could spot a welcoming rocky breeding ground exposed by, say, newly melted ice. This bird and a mate could strike out on their own and start something new.
There's a percentage of the population that just that does wander and establishes new locations for breeding. So that seems to be part of how evolution works and how adaptation works.
For The Pulse, I'm Sophia Schmidt.